This is the best of Therapy in a Nutshell.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, and welcome to my show, Therapy in a Nutshell. You're listening to the beautiful music of Tara Bay Bedford, and that's a song that she wrote called We Can't Do This Forever. You can find that on YouTube. Okay, so let's talk about anxiety today. Let me give you a little brief background who I am again. My name is Dr. Patricia Bay, and I've got over 30 years experience in private practice as a marriage family therapist in Northern California. And I wrote a book called Therapy in a Nutshell, which is the basic lessons I teach in therapy all the time. And then my radio show is about helping people gather information on something they might be struggling with, the challenges in their lives, and hoping to give you some tools to just navigate the world a little easier. So tune in. You can also listen to my show later on my podcast if you go to Anchor, the Anchor app, or iTunes or Spotify or a lot of other podcast stations. You can type in Dr. Patricia Bay, Therapy in a Nutshell, and the podcast can come up, and you can listen to it for free. So hopefully it's going to get out there and help some people. But today we are going to talk about anxiety. In my private practice, I have seen hundreds and hundreds of people that struggle with anxiety. In fact, I would say it's the most common thing that people come into my office with. And it's often a portion of other things they're dealing with, and sometimes it is the issue that they come into therapy for. Anxiety can really ruin your peacefulness, your ability to be calm and comfortable in your world right then and right now. And so anxiety becomes almost a way of life for some people. And we're going to talk about that in different ways. I want to talk to you a little bit about what your brain does when you're anxious, what's happening to it, and then what you do behaviorally when you're anxious. By the end of the show, I'm going to give you some coping mechanisms and some things to do to start to change this pattern in yourself, and maybe some ways to do some more research in a healthy manner. So you've heard me talk in prior shows about fear, and fear can be a really big component in how we manage and navigate our world. In chapter one in my book, Love and Fear, I talk about how you can exist in a place of love where you're calm and you're comfortable and you're trusting in yourself and you're trusting that others around you are okay and you're trusting that you are connected to some kind of higher power. My word for that for me is God. And you're doing okay. And in a nanosecond, you can be thrown into a place of fear where you are mistrusting all those same things. From a place of fear, we worry about rejection, that you aren't going to like me or you're going to push me away. And then we worry about abandonment, which is actually, rejection is fear of abandonment. If you reject me and don't love me anymore or don't like me, you're going to abandon me and leave me. And then the other thing we fear as human beings a lot is either death or dying. So when you're in a place of fear, you try to feel safe. And it is in this fearful place that anxiety takes its root and begins to manifest. So anxiety is different than fear, but it is a piece of fear. It's a part of fear. I talk to people often about what I call anticipatory anxiety. This is where we sit and worry that something might happen or is going to happen or what ifs. I call them the what ifs. And we start to get wound up inside with that anticipatory anxiety. So when you're feeling anxious, it's a really good idea to ask yourself, is this happening right now? Am I truly in a state of anxiety for a reason that's going on right this moment? Or am I anticipating something that's going to happen and I'm coloring it with my fear crayon saying, oh, what if, what if, what if? So look at the difference of anticipating something or actually being in a state where it's creating anxiety for you right now. So I've talked to you before about when you are looking at a behavior within yourself, it's really important to ask yourself, what am I feeling? What am I thinking? And the same goes for anxiety. When you start to feel that kind of amped up, nervous, butterflies in your stomach, tensing sort of feeling, and you might have a word for that, but most people say, oh, I feel so anxious. What you do is you stop and say, what am I feeling anxious about? What am I feeling? What am I thinking? And a big key here is to answer yourself so that you can define what it is that's creating the anxiety for you. So asking and answering is always important when you're trying to grow out of something that you do that you don't like and you want to change. So it's very important to do that with anxiety as well. So let's look at a little bit of what creates anxiety. There's a hereditary component to anxiety. It's genetic. There's a 3 to 5 times greater risk of having anxiety if a first-degree relative has it as well, like your mother or your father or your siblings. If they have anxiety, there's a chance that you might be hardwired that way as well. And I see that often in my office. People will say, I'm anxious just like my mom was anxious, or my brother and I both have this problem. And they recognize that it kind of runs in the family. So hereditary is one component of it, but it isn't something that has to define you. There's ways you can even mitigate that hereditary component. The other issue is there are personality traits that tend to be more anxious. People that are very perfectionistic, that are kind of fast moving, like a type A sort of personality, someone who likes things just so, they're pretty black or white. Those kind of personality traits can tend toward more anxiety because it's hard to have control over everything all the time. And when we don't have control, we can tend toward being upset about that or worrying about rejection or being fearful that it's not going the way that we want it to go. So if you have that type of personality that is kind of, you know, it lends you toward wanting control and wanting things just so, that's also a precursor to anxiety. So just recognize that. There's also a component of conditioning, how we are parented, how people respond to stressful situations. Let's take a really easy example. If in your family somebody spilled the milk at the table and your parents jumped up and went crazy and had, you know, got all upset and got worried about the tablecloth and, you know, just got really way over the top upset about it, that could lend toward anxiety in you. And they were showing a lot of anxiety doing that. So the conditioning of how you are taught to respond to your environment and to stimuli in your world plays a factor in whether you're an anxious person or not. And then the last thing is, and there's a lot that can attribute to anxiety, but one of the last big things is environmental concerns. How the stressful conditioning is, whether there was abuse, whether you were naturally fearful of things that would happen, which made you anxious that they could happen again. And also drugs, alcohol, even over-the-counter medications, even prescribed medications can up anxiety in your being. And the other thing is hormones. Hormones play a big role in anxiety, especially during adolescence and other hormonal times in your life, such as menopause or premenstrual syndrome. But when hormones are off, anxiety can go way up and you might not even recognize that it isn't your world that's scary. It's just that you're off hormonally inside. So these are all things that can affect whether we tend toward anxiety or not. So we're going to take a break in another minute or so. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what's happening in your brain, how that affects you, and some ways that you can learn to work with your brain when you tend to be an anxious person. Then after that break, after we do that section, we're going to talk about some coping skills and ways to lessen anxiety in you and maybe learn to train your brain to not be so anxious. So we've got some good coping tools coming up and some more about anxiety. If you have anxiety and you want to call in with a question, you're welcome to get on the KCNR1460.com. website, and you can type in the question in the chat and I'll try to address it for you, or you can call in to area code 530-605-4567. Okay, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Memorial Day is May 25th, a day set aside to honor those who've gone before us and given their lives for their country. I'm Rob Burrows, reminding you there will not be a live service at the Igo Veterans Cemetery, but the cemetery will be open for visitors. There will not be a live service at Reading Memorial Park, but there will be a live service on the Reading Memorial Park Facebook page at 10 a.m., honoring our veterans and those who sacrificed for our freedom. The Northern California Veterans Museum offices at 2110 North Street in Anderson will be open to the public from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. for visitors, following current guidelines for safety. From all of us at the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, thank you for honoring our veterans and their sacrifices this Memorial Day weekend. For more information, call the museum office at 378-2280. That's 378-2280.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
I expect it to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military.
I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
This is the best of Therapy in a Nutshell.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. I am Dr. Patricia Bay, Dr. Patty, and you are listening right now to the incredibly beautiful music of Doug and Sandy McMaster. Doug's playing slack key guitar, and Sandy is playing ukulele, and it is the most peaceful, beautiful music. I highly recommend you look them up on YouTube and get a hold of their CDs because they will make you feel calm, and isn't that what we're talking about today? All right, we're talking about anxiety. And just a quick shout out to OsteoStrong, who's sponsoring my show, Ken and Linda Burbank, awesome people who own OsteoStrong here in Redding, California, 2435 Athens Avenue. OsteoStrong helps build your bone density, and it's amazing and easy and cost affordable and wonderful. Give them a call at 530-215-3115. All right, let's go back to talking about anxiety. I told you when we came back from break, I was going to talk to you about what's happening with your brain when you are stressing and when you're anxious. There are some higher cognitive functions in our brain, and they're located in the prefrontal cortex. If you put your hand on your forehead, that's your prefrontal cortex. And this prefrontal cortex is involved in thinking and planning and social behavior and how you do your emotions. So it plays a key role in anxiety. From an evolutionary standpoint, your prefrontal cortex is a newer part of your brain. It isn't as ancient as some parts of your brain. And a lot of the processing for anxiety takes place in some of these more ancient parts of the brain. And this section of the brain is called the limbic system. And one of the key areas in the limbic system that is responsible for anxiety is this little walnut-sized section that is called the amygdala. And the amygdala is kind of right there in the center of your brain. And it is the section that is in charge of fear. It is in charge of fight, flight, or freezing. When you get kind of stuck into your amygdala, what's happening is something in you is interpreting what's going on as life-threatening or scary. And I help people all the time learn how to recognize when they're getting hijacked. That's what I call it, when you get hijacked into your amygdala. It's like you're kind of coping, you're hanging on, you're trying to be rational, things are going all right. You can feel yourself winding up. You can feel that it's getting worse, that you're getting to that point that you hate to get to because you're usually embarrassed later. And all of a sudden, there's this kind of a click point, and you sort of fall off an edge. That's what it's been described to me lots of times by people who are hijacked on a regular basis. It's like, I'm holding back. Oh, I'm gone. I'm there. I'm in my amygdala when they start to know what it is. Once you are trying to function with a situation from your amygdala, you are not really thinking the pros and cons and the right and wrong of it. You are just trying to survive. So you'll go into a fight, flight, or freeze mode trying to cope with the situation. Now, what's interesting is some people give themselves permission to get hijacked. They get really good at it, and they get hijacked very easily and very quickly. And what I've noticed in people over all the years I've been doing this is I see people that tend to give themselves permission to handle a situation like they're handling it. They give themselves permission to get angry easily or get super anxious about something, and they think that they're trying to make themselves safe by doing that. When they get extensively that way, they get hijacked into their amygdala. Once you're functioning from that part of your brain, it's really hard to get out of it. It takes a good 20 minutes to get out of it. So coping with, if you're somebody who gets hijacked and gets stuck in that raging kind of super anxiety, super angry section of your brain, you need to know that that is something that can be avoided. So to start out, you want to recognize that you're getting hijacked and you're in that fight, flight, or freeze place. So what I want to teach you by the end of this show is how not to go there, how to recognize you're getting hijacked and don't. And if you do get hijacked or somebody you love is hijacked, how to get them out of that in a safe way and faster than if they just keep re-hijacking themselves. So for this moment, though, just know that your amygdala plays a really important part in whether you get way over the top anxious. So even if you don't get hijacked and you just run at this low-level kind of anxiety that ruins your peacefulness, know that, and know that your brain is sometimes in kind of a hyperactive mode and making you feel fearful over what's going on. And you might be more fearful than somebody who doesn't struggle with anxiety. And part of you are going, we get that, Dr. Patty, because I suffer with anxiety all the time, you're saying, and you know what it feels like. And you know that not everybody feels that anxious about a situation. So I want you to recognize that that amygdala is really important. But what we want to do is get you out of that section of functioning, that really fearful section, and have you function from a portion of your brain that brings more to the table. Now, I'm talking to you about this all in layperson terms. If we wanted to sit down with a neurologist or something like that, they would probably be laughing at how simplistic I'm putting this. But I like to put this in simple terms for people so that you can use it when you're trying to deal with anxiety. So let's say that from your amygdala, you're not making very good choices. You're just really over the top anxious or fearful. When you can function more from your temporal lobes and a calm prefrontal cortex, you're going to be able to decide, is this worth being upset about? Is it not? Am I overplaying this in my head? Can I mobilize some of my coping skills that I learned from Dr. Patty's show on anxiety? Can I change this in how I'm letting my brain function? So we're going to learn some coping skills in just a moment. But I also want to talk a little bit about some people really try to medicate anxiety. And I have had many clients who have such severe anxiety that medication is actually really helping them function. But you need to know that medication does help for anxiety for some people and some it doesn't. SSRIs, which are serotonin reuptake inhibitors, and there's different types of antidepressants that do different things in your brain. And whether those affect your dopamine or your serotonin levels and they help you with your anxiety, that's something you have to find out. So Don't hesitate to talk to your medical doctor about anxiety and ask if it's something that you should try an antidepressant for, because sometimes it can reduce your anxiety. But I really like people to try to learn to function their brain in a more healthy way so that they don't need medication if possible. The big medication that people tend toward are what are called benzodiazepines, which are Xanax, clonazepam, lorazepam, all the ones that end in PAM are often the benzodiazepines. And you need to know those are tranquilizers. So, yes, they reduce anxiety because they tranquilize you, but they aren't necessarily good for you. They can be depressing to your brain in terms of slowing down functioning, you get foggy-headed. They're also highly addictive. And getting off benzodiazepines when you're addicted to them can be a huge challenge. Often needs rehab because getting off of benzos can be terribly traumatic for your body physically. So be really careful with utilizing Xanax and things like that to handle your anxiety. I call those ER meds, emergency meds. When I have clients that have severe anxiety, they may get a prescription from their doctor, but I suggest they market the bottle with emergency only. They put it in a safe. They don't leave it out anywhere. And they only take one if they're really, really struggling with a severe panic disorder or caught in a huge obsessive compulsive disorder loop, which is severe anxiety. And they use that to mitigate an emergency. So it's something to think about. And I know that there's probably people out there that use Xanax every single day, a couple times a day. And be careful. Just don't let yourself get addicted because it's nasty. Okay, so when we want to get out of our amygdala, that section of our brain that really drives the show when you're in there, we want to be thinking more from our temporal lobes or our prefrontal cortex. And there's a really cool way to do this. Music is not processed in your amygdala. Music is processed in different parts of your brain and primarily in the temporal lobes. So one way to get out of being hijacked in your amygdala or being in a super anxious state is to put on some music. And it really doesn't matter what kind of music. Research has shown it could be heavy metal. It could be something light and peaceful. You could listen to Randy McGinnis's Native American flute music, which is very peaceful, or Doug and Sandy McMaster's slack key guitar. Very peaceful stuff, and it can calm you down. But listening to any kind of music will take you out of your amygdala and help you enter a different part of your brain where you have more to work from. So I want to give you a coping skill right now. If you get really anxious and you're that way over the top anxious, turn on some music and you can do a neurofeedback type of tapping. So if you give yourself a butterfly hug, which is cross your arms in front of you and hold your shoulders. Now move your center, your middle finger into that hollow between your collarbones. There's kind of a hollow under that bone. Find that spot with each of your middle fingers as your hands are crossed over. And then you're going to tap alternating fingers. And tap that hollow with your center finger because it's your strongest finger. And tap that while you're listening to music. Tap it in rhythm to the music. And what will happen is the tapping, doing the rhythmic portion of the music, actually takes you into a certain part of your temporal lobe that handles rhythm. The music helps take you out of your amygdala and into a better functioning part of your brain for calmness. And you are also doing a bilateral sort of movement, which is going to stimulate right hemisphere and left hemisphere, which will calm you down as well. Those are the techniques we use with EMDR to help work through trauma. And we want bilateral right and left hemisphere stimulation. So that's a very simple technique when you're starting to feel anxious or when you're hugely anxious. Music, cross your arms, and tap. You can also go to YouTube and type in tapping. And there's some very simple YouTube videos that show you 9 different areas in your body that you can tap. It's so simple to do. It takes moments. You could excuse yourself and go into a bathroom and do some tapping for just a minute and calm yourself down. But we'll put that in our coping skills as we go on with the show, too. Okay, so we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to do some more coping skills. We're talking about anxiety, and this is Dr. Patricia Bay.
Tobacco and Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. Tobacco and Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Tobacco and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
It takes honor. It takes courage. It takes commitment to serve in our armed forces and sacrifice for our freedom. Hi, I'm Rob Burrows from the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, Homeward Bound Military Family Support Services, and Silver Star Widows and Veterans Programs. During this pandemic time frame, the Northern California Veterans Museum team has continued to serve our veterans in the community with food, advocacy, and support for those veterans and their families in need. Due to the COVID-19 threat, we have had to cancel all of our fundraising during this time frame. But our mission continues, helping veterans in need every day. We would like to invite you during this time around Memorial Day to make a financial donation to the museum, Homeward Bound or Silver Star Widows and Veterans, in honor of your loved one. For more information, call the museum office at 378-2280. That's 378-2280. Or go to our Facebook page and make a donation on PayPal. Thank you for your continued support, and thank you for our veterans.
This is the best of therapy in a nutshell.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. You're listening to the beautiful slack key guitar music from Doug and Sandy McMaster playing guitar and ukulele. Beautiful music, beautiful people. Doug and Sandy are just sweet. Okay, we're talking about anxiety, and we're talking about how it's different than fear, but it's a portion of fear. We talked a little bit about anticipatory anxiety and how you can anticipate things happening in your life and really create anxiety where it might not even be necessary. But as a human being, you're trying to feel safe. So also, if you're struggling with anxiety, know that you are not alone. A lot of people have some form of anxiety, even if it's just a little bit of I'm afraid you won't like me, or huge, as in they suffer with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorders, and it really affects their life and their functioning. So there is help for anxiety. You don't have to suffer alone, and there are behavioral techniques that can help. Also know that if you're an adolescent and you're going into anxiety, or it's getting worse as you go into puberty and hormones start to flood your body, that it's really important to get treatment early because you are brain training. And one of the things that anxiety can do is it can make us inadvertently train ourselves to do some inappropriate and unhealthy things with our anxiety. So I want you to recognize brain training. I'm gonna use an example here from my husband that died, Rich. He's a wonderful guy, died of a brain disease. But Rich had some OCD, and we often thought that his OCD was part of him going into this brain disease. But he would get fixated on something. And, for example, he got really into airflow at one time, and he decided that the garage door should be up 1 inch. And so he wanted to stand there and push the garage door opener until the garage was like almost exactly an inch up. And he wanted me to do that. And I looked at him and said, no, we're not going to stand here and be OCD about airflow in the garage. And he's going, oh, because he really wanted me to do it. And I said, you need to challenge this ritual. So we were together 39 years, but I taught him when you have an OCD thing that you're doing, you have to have something a certain way. You've got to go back and check the lock. You have to, and the person who I'm saying this for knows who this is. Somebody spins left 4 times, they have to stand up and spin right 4 times to even it out. She's smiling. I know she is. If you've got some of those OCD type of things where you have to have a certain way, what I suggest you do is challenge that ritual. So if you're anxious going into your classroom to do a oral book report, if you're anxious going to a party with friends, whatever you tend toward anxiety on, look and see what permissions you give yourself to be freaked out and to be upset, because you are training your brain. When you challenge those thoughts, those inappropriate thoughts, and you challenge that anxiety, and you work with your brain to do something differently, then that doesn't take a toehold in your neurotransmitters. You've got to understand in our brain, the way things work is by neurotransmitters. It gets transferred from one section to our brain to the next. And if you have an anxious thought and you give your brain permission to run with that thought, you're going to almost create a neural pathway that is simpler and simpler to access as you go into anxiety. So the brain training you want to do is to not make that neural pathway deeper and stronger. You want to say no. I'll give you another example of something that has worked well for me. When Rich had his terminal brain disease and he was dying, I'd often wake up in the middle of the night, and I can do some of my best worrying from like 2 to 4 in the morning. So my brain goes into this like overload anxiety thing when I've got something to worry about. And I'm not, you know, Rich's terminal brain disease was definitely something to deal with and to worry about. But I recognized that I was starting to train my brain to wake up at 2 in the morning and to go into this overload anxiety time, and it wasn't good for me, and it was making me exhausted. So what I did is I worked on finding something that said to my brain, no, we're not going to do this. So I started listening to Audible books when Rich was really sick, and I would turn on an Audible book, and I actually keep an Audible book on my phone that's very relaxing, and Eckhart Tolle's A New Earth, and he's got this soft German accent, and he's very calming. So I will turn on A New Earth, and I'll bring up something like Bubble Witch on my phone, and I'll listen to the book and play Bubble Witch, because it takes two things to shut my brain off. And when I do those two things, within about 10 minutes, I'm relaxing, I'm shutting off the nervous thinking, and as soon as I feel the least bit tired, I put it all down and go back to sleep. And now that I've noticed, I've done that for quite some time, if I'm going into that anxious state, I automatically do those two things, and I'm telling my brain, no, we're not going to do anxiety, we're going to do the calming routine. So you have to find your own calming routine that does not give you permission to travel down that anxious path. So fight it. Fight the anxiety by finding healthier behaviors that replace it. And you're going to be working with your brain. It's just super important to do that, and it really helps. Okay, so I want to give you another coping skill. This is a coping skill that I use for anybody suffering with chronic anything. Chronic depression, chronic anxiety, chronic pain, whether it's like chronic back pain, headaches, anything. I want you to picture a scale from 0 to 10. And since we're talking about anxiety, we're going to use the anxiety example. Let's say at 0, you have no anxiety or no depression or no back pain, no anything, the thing you struggle with. You're at 0. When you're at 10, you're way over the top, just like on a medical pain scale of 0 to 10 when a doctor says, well, what's your pain level right now? 10 is screaming pain, can't stand it, crawling out of your skin, whether it's anxiety or depression or physical pain, doesn't matter. So the thing I see in my office a lot is this is how people deal with their anxiety or their chronic pain. From 0 to about 5 or 6, they try really hard to ignore it. They don't want to be a baby. They don't want to whine. They hate gathering attention for this stuff that they see as weak. So from 0 to 5 or 6, they're just like pushing it under, ignoring it. I'm tough. You know, I'm not really anxious inside. I'm faking it. In fact, people with anxiety and depression both have really good abilities to put a mask on and fake. They could be screaming inside, and most of the world won't know it. But from 0 to 6, they're trying to fake it. Then probably at 7 or 8, they're really crawling out of their skin. They're having a really hard time. They might reach for the Xanax, or they might drink some alcohol, or they might do something to try and turn the volume down on either the anxiety, the depression, or the physical pain. And they're way behind by that time. Any medical doctor will tell you that if you wait to treat your pain till you're a 10, you're way behind the 8 ball. You can't catch up. So what I like people to do is create a plan that starts at 1. So from 0 to 3, you have just a tiny bit of anxiety. You're noticing you're a little OCD, or the noises are bugging you because you have sensory issues, or you're going to do some public speaking and it's got you a little nervous, or you're a musician and you're going to play on stage and you're having a little bit of anxiety. So from 0 to 3, what are the things that calm you down? So you need to find those things. And you need to know what works for you. Now, feel free to try music. Feel free to try tapping. You can also get online and you can type in alphabet of stress management and coping skills. And there is a whole A to Z bunch of coping skills that are really cool. Type in alphabet of stress management and coping skills and look what comes up. It's a very cool resource. But find some things that are very easy. Might be deep breathing, might be excuse yourself and go into the bathroom and deep breathe and do some tapping while you're singing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star because you're trying to take yourself into your temporal lobes. And see if you can keep your anxiety, your depression, or your pain down below that first bar, which is after 3. So you don't wait. You don't shove it under. You don't pretend it's not happening. You do something proactive and healthy from 0 to 3. Now, let's say that your anxiety creeps up to 4, 5, or 6, or something happens that's pretty strenuous, and all of a sudden you're way in pain, physical pain, or you're way anxious, and you're pretty high up there. You need a next level of coping skills. What are the things that calm you down? Is it calling your best friend? Is it deep breathing, doing some yoga, taking a walk, listening to some music, maybe taking a couple of Tylenol to calm your nerve endings down? And you need to know if Tylenol is safe for you or not. You have to ask your doctor, of course. But doing something like that that can calm the pain or calm the nervousness or the anxiety. That might be drinking a cup of tea, you know, a calming sort of tea, not something with caffeine. If you have chronic physical pain, that would be where you would put your feet up, you would ice your back, you would take your headache medication. You would do what you need to do before it starts to get too bad. All right, so then let's say you get past a 4, 5, and 6 for some reason. You're in that 7, 8, 9, 10 range. Then you have higher order emergency things that you do to quell your anxiety, to deal with it. And I like to have my clients go home with homework and say, I want 4, 5, or 6 coping skills from a 0, 1, 2, 3 zone for your thing you struggle with, your anxiety. Then I want to know what you would do if you had a 4, 5, or 6 level of anxiety. And then what do you do if you really get into that severe place? You're totally hijacked. What's your behaviors that you do? How do you move yourself out of that situation? How do you begin to create something that's not so over the top and have you locked into that? So if you're one of these people who waits and waits and waits and pushes it under and tries not to feel it and thinks it's going to go away, then this is a good homework assignment for you. Define your 0 to 3, define your 4, 5, and 6 coping skills, and define your 7, 8, 9, and 10. What takes you out of it? And this is also something you can share with a loved one that you trust. When you say, hey, I'm a 3 right now, could you help me make it quiet in here? Or would you go for a walk with me? Or I'm going to go lay down for 20 minutes. Whatever it is you do, that will help. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to do some final coping skills and sum up some stuff about anxiety so that you can go forward and be less anxious from here. So come back to Therapy in a Nutshell in just a minute. This is Dr. Patricia Bay.
Working from home? Conference calls?
You're still on mute, John.
With everything we have going on right now, it's never been more important to get the sleep we need. Quality sleep is a natural immune booster, and only the Sleep Number 360 smart bed senses your movements and automatically adjusts your comfort and support on both sides, your Sleep Number setting. So all those other things we're doing to stay healthy and happy, well, they'll work better too. And now, during our Memorial Day sale, save $1,000 on the Queen Sleep No. 360 Special Edition Smart Bed, now only $17.99, only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
Dr. Farrell in Palisadro is now making dental work more affordable by offering a Dental Discount Savings Plan annual membership. The Dental Discount Savings Plan is simple, straightforward, and includes 20% off all treatment, such as emergency limited exams, restorative work, fillings, crowns, partials, bridges, dentures, and periodontal treatment, a comprehensive exam, oral cancer screening, a TMJ exam, a periodic exam, and two sets of x-rays, along with cleaning and two fluoride treatments. The program is a discount plan, not a dental insurance plan, and is only available at the office of Dr. Farrell. The Dental Discount Savings Plan annual membership provides immediate eligibility. No yearly maximum, no deductibles, no claims to submit, no limitations for pre-existing treatment, and no waiting periods. Children on the plan must be 15 years or younger. Some restrictions apply. Membership prices may vary. Contact Dr. Farrell, located at 9461 Deschutes Road, Suite 2 in Palisadro. Call 547-57 to make an appointment today. That's 547-5757.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
This is the best of Therapy in a Nutshell.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, and today we are talking about anxiety. You're listening to the beautiful music of Doug and Sandy McMaster, slack key guitar and ukulele. They're from Kauai and just amazing musicians and amazingly lovely people. And they love how their music helps people calm down and feel some peace. So please look up their music on YouTube or Spotify and Pandora and all that, and they have some wonderful CDs. I highly recommend them. Okay, so also just thanking OsteoStrong for sponsoring my show, Ken and Linda Burbank. They are neat people, and OsteoStrong really helps your bone density. I've done it for about a year and a half, and I love it. Okay, so we're talking about anxiety and talking about some coping skills and how to do this differently. So I've seen people in my 30-plus years in my private practice, and almost everybody struggles with some form of anxiety, and that's why they come into therapy. But let's talk about the benefits of things like cognitive behavioral therapy and looking underneath your anxiety. Often we think we're anxious about something that is external from us. It is our parents, or it's our spouse, or it's our mother-in-law, or it's somebody that is doing something to us that makes us anxious. And in reality, that anxiety that's going on inside of us is something that we are using as a response to our external stimuli. And when we can look, really take a deep, hard look at what's going on underneath us with that anxiety, we can look for those factors that affect it. We talked about hereditary or genetics. Let's say that you have an anxious family. They're just hardwired that way. And your mom was like that and your siblings are like that. Okay, so you accept that and you know that you need to work with your hereditary. Let's say you have kind of a tightly wound personality and you recognize that's a portion of it. You want to look at why you're like that. Did you develop that because of your conditioning of how you were raised? Were you taught to be anxious because your parents were always fearful of things happening? And then you take a look at your environment. Are you taking any medications that could be increasing anxiety? Are you mishandling your brain with drugs and alcohol and things that make your brain not so healthy that can create anxiety? Take a look at that, and those are things that you can begin to work with. But when clients come into my office, what I really like to do is not talk about what they think is making them anxious. I want to talk about what goes on underneath. I teach a class called Performance Anxiety when I'm at music functions. I'm a Native American flutist, and I play piano and classical flute. And I like to help musicians with performance anxiety because it, when people struggle with that, it really gets in the way of them doing their best musical performance. So in my class, when I teach that, we usually do some group hypnosis. And what we're looking for is, what are the underlying causes of your anxiety? And, you know, taking into account the hereditary and environment and the, you know, how you were raised, all that. Okay. But underneath all of that is often something they can put their finger on. I've had many, many people in this class that I teach come up and or share with the class or come up to me afterwards and say, look, I didn't realize, but all I kept hearing in that hypnosis, I remember one man telling me, it was my father's voice, and he was telling me how I couldn't do anything right and I wasn't good enough and why was I such an idiot, and he had this phrase that he called him, some stupid kind of phrase, and he said, I didn't realize that it was his voice I was hearing in my head when I was going to go play on stage. And he said, it was so unconscious. And he was crying when he told me this because he felt like the hypnosis had really released him from that method that he was using to try and control himself. And it's so interesting how in our childhood, in our being raised either by others or how we raise ourselves into adulthood, that we get messages that we think keep us safe. For example, if somebody's always called you stupid or not good enough, you kind of replay that in your head because you're trying to avoid feeling like that. But what you actually do is you solidify feeling like that. So if you really struggle with anxiety, don't hesitate to get some help, because doing some hypnosis, doing some EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing for traumas, can be extremely helpful for getting to the underlying causes of what makes your brain say mobilizing anxiety makes you safer. So that's really important. And there's some cognitive behavioral things you can do, some actual thinking errors that you can get in touch with and learn to think a little bit differently to process your anxiety in a healthier manner. So getting into therapy is a really good thing. The other thing is to take a specific thing that causes you anxiety and find something that mitigates that. Mitigate means lessen that. Many people I know with anxiety have sensory issues, really bright lights, really loud noises. If there's too much chaos in a room, like a noisy restaurant with clanking dishes and people talking and laughing and stuff all around you going on, that chaos can be massively overwhelming to people that have sensory issues. And the end result of the sensory issues is that it creates anxiety for you as you try to find a way to manage that anxiety, that sensory overload in your body. So what I suggest to people is you actually find coping skills that address those symptoms. Like, let's say bright lights really bug you. You go ahead and wear your sunglasses in the restaurant, or let's say the bouncing basketball in a gym is way too much sensory overload for you if you're trying to watch a basketball game at the high school gym. You put foam earplugs in. If you can't stand the feel of foam earplugs in your ears, then you put on headphones, even if they're not plugged into anything. And if somebody says, why are you wearing your headphones? I suggest that people just own it. You say, hey, I'm really sensitive to loud noises, and these help tone the noise down a lot so I can sit here and enjoy the game. When you explain it without apologizing, you don't have to be embarrassed. People are really supportive. They go, oh, yeah, it bothers me too. I should try that. Don't be surprised if you hear that. But you take the thing that bugs you the most, and you figure out a way around it. And you address those sensory issues one at a time to reduce your anxiety. If you get anxious when you're going to go do something like give a book report at school or do a public speaking thing or have to get up at a business meeting, then what you do is you really ask yourself, what am I afraid is going to happen? And then you answer yourself. So the anxiety becomes, how do I feel safe? How do I make myself not be so afraid to do this? And I always like to ask myself, what's the worst that can happen? And when you've gone down that trail and you figure out what's the worst that can happen, sometimes you say, I can handle that. And it lessens your anxiety. And Another coping skill I want to teach you is a thing I call rabbit trails. And people, especially very intelligent people, very bright people, tend to do this thing that I call rabbit trails. Put your hand out flat, and right in the center of your palm, picture that there is an issue, any issue. What if I don't have the money to pay the rent this month? Or what if my boyfriend leaves me? Or what if my teenager gets kicked out of school? I don't know, pick something that makes you anxious. Put it in your hand, almost like if you took a pen and wrote it on the palm of your hand. That's the issue. And then what people do that tend toward anxiety is they run up the rabbit trails, and those are all your fingers, and those are all the what-ifs. And if you're anything like me, I can have like 20 rabbit trails, not just five. But you run out to the end of your rabbit trails going, oh, my gosh, what if this happened? And, oh, if that happens, I'm just going to die. And if that happens, oh, I'll be so embarrassed. And you're just running down these rabbit trails trying to figure out what to do. Now, if you're anything like me, I can do 20 rabbit trails in a nanosecond and figure out the what-ifs on all of them and either drive myself nuts or come back to center and say, okay, if any of those things happen, I can deal with it. Then what I like to do is set my intention to what I really want to do and how I want the situation that's in the palm of my hand to turn out. So if you traveled up your arm and went all the way to your heart, and you handled this situation in the palm of your hand with your heart and a little bit further with your brain, so you have what you feel and you have what you think well mobilized to the problem that's in the palm of your hand, and you say, that's the path I want to take. I don't want to race down the 20 other rabbit trails of what ifs. I want to handle this situation with my heart and with my logic, and I want to do this good job with that. You've already traveled down the rabbit trails. You've already decided you could handle those. If one of those happens, you'll mobilize something to deal with it. But notice that you're rabbit trailing. Come back to center. Come back to the palm of your hand where the issue is. Then travel up your arm, go to your heart, go to your brain, and say, this is how I'm going to handle it, and set your intention. Even when you listen to me talk about it, if you stop and get in touch with how you're feeling right now, you will feel more relaxed because you let yourself go down the rabbit trails. You purposely brought yourself back, and then you used your best self. You didn't let yourself go off into your amygdala and get hijacked and fight, flight, or freeze. You didn't start to, you know, run around like a chicken with your head cut off and, you know, like you're not thinking straight. You're using your heart, which is, how do I feel? And you're using your brain, how do I think about this? What are my thoughts about this? What's my logic? And you're using those two together, and you just feel calmer, and you feel focused, and you're motivated in the right direction. And that's just a huge lesson for handling the things that bother you. So just kind of in recap here, remember that there are components to anxiety, hereditary issues, personality traits, conditioning, how you've been taught to deal with anxious situations, and environmental things like medications, some you shouldn't be taking, some drugs and alcohol type things, and even sometimes prescription medications that are prescribed to you can create more anxiety. So also recognize that hormones can play a factor in that. If you've got a thyroid condition that, like Hashimoto's, where your thyroid is raging and then not enough, hot and cold, that can create anxiety in you, as well as hormones related to menstrual periods and to menopause and adolescence, all those kind of things as well. So recognize that there are behavioral things you can do. You can learn to manage your brain on anxiety so that your brain doesn't run away with you. I like to think that we drive our own car. The car does not drive us, and we're in the back seat, not even buckled in, flailing down a mountain. So our job is to get you into the front seat, drive the car of your anxiety, and find the coping skills that make you feel calmer and better about yourself. So also remember, in the history of the world, no one has ever relaxed by somebody saying, relax, doesn't work. That's not how we help people relax. We help people we love mobilize the coping skills that they have told us work for us. So, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and you have been listening to Therapy in a Nutshell. You can go to my podcast on iTunes or Anchor, Anchor app, which is free and safe, or Spotify. And let's finish off the show with some more beautiful slack key guitar with Doug and Sandy McMaster. Thank you for sharing your music with us today, Doug and Sandy. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, and let's heal the world 1 hour at a time.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.